Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. In this part of the show, we will be inviting questions on care of companion animals. From time to time, we've tried to do this program because we know that people will always have concerns and questions about the animals in their lives. We do shows periodically on human medicine. We have physicians here, and we say, you know, call in and ask questions about yourself and your family. And this is so that you can deal with your health concerns about the other members of your family, the ones that go on four legs. I'm sure that our guests this morning will do their best to help you out. Carol Akers and Maureen McMichael are with us. They are both doctors of veterinary medicine here at the U of I College of Vet Medicine. One of them, Carol, particularly is interested in dental issues and dental care for companion animals, and we can talk a little bit about that. And Maureen McMichael is a trauma specialist, and she is particularly interested in doing something to revive the trauma response capability, the emergency response capability that the vet school at one time had, and they're wanting to build that up again. So we can talk a little bit about that. And I'm sure there, if people have questions about, you know, thinking about dealing with emergency issues with their animals, we can do that. But again, anything that's a general kind of question that you could think of asking a veterinarian, I'm sure that our guests will do their best to see if they can help you out and answer your question. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So, any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Let me just go ahead and ask Maureen McMichael, to talk a little bit about what you're interested in doing. Just before we got started, you said what you're really here to do here at the U of I to do is to try to revive the that part of the vet school that's all about responding to animal emergencies.
Yes, I just got here about 6 months ago from Texas A&M. I was there for 6 years, where I started the emergency critical care service there. And when I left, it was thriving. It's still thriving, which is great. And it provides an incredible need, not just for the community, but also for the local veterinarians. It's a need that helps them, especially if they're busy and an emergency walks in the day or at night. Nobody can be available 24/7. And so the local veterinarians have to close at some point and have a place that they know they can refer to. What I'm doing right now is building the infrastructure so that we have everything in place we need to be able to do the greatest job possible for our emergency and critical care cases. We just ordered, and it was just delivered 2 days ago, a state-of-the-art human ventilator so we can do life support. There are sometimes cases where animals can't breathe because they're paralyzed for a short period of time. And if we can ventilate them, we can save their lives. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of really great stuff that we can do here.
This is, I'm sure, a real concern for a lot of people because, as you say, if something happens, you've got a problem and you're concerned about your cat or your dog, and it's during the daytime, it's during office hours, well, you're going to call your vet. But then the question is, well, okay, what happens to this? It's 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday or something like that. And when you cannot call your vet, what do you do?
Right. And a lot of people in this town did not know that we had an emergency service. Just a couple of days ago, we had our emergency signs installed. There's one on Lincoln, and there's one in closer to the vet school that say 24-hour emergency care, because we are open 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. Huh.
And so this is the kind of thing, can people just show up on your doorstep if they have a problem, bring their animal and just go there?
Absolutely. Anytime they can show up, they can call ahead. Their veterinarian can call ahead. Either way, anyway. And our motto is AAA service, any emergency, anytime, from any place.
Mm-hmm. What, in terms of basic first aid, if you have a problem, and I suppose this really would depend on what the problem is. If you have an animal that was injured, that's one thing. But if you have an animal that's just clearly very ill, maybe that's something else. Let's say that you do have an animal that's been injured. Something happens in the house. Something happens outside. You get hit by a car. You know, who knows what kind of things. And you're going to transport that animal. You're going to bring them to you for care. What should you do?
The first and most important thing is to protect yourself. because even the sweetest dog, the sweetest cat on earth could bite if they're hurt. And so the first thing to always do is protect yourself from getting bit. And there are a couple of ways to do it. One is to just not go near their mouth. If you can very gently put them on a board, or if you can gently put them on a blanket and carry them in. Another way is to fasten a muzzle at home, sort of a homemade muzzle. You can take a very long sock and you can tie it around a dog's muzzle gently, not too tight, just so that they can't bite you. And be very, very careful. That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. And what if there's bleeding?
If there's bleeding, the best thing to do is just get to a veterinarian as soon as possible. That's honestly the best, because although putting pressure is something that we learn in human medicine, it's not always the best thing. If there's a broken bone under the area that's bled and you're pushing on it, it's likely to cause extreme pain. And it could also easily make things worse.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm thinking about other situations where it seems like maybe the animal is clearly ill. Maybe they're listless, their breathing is labored, there's been vomiting, all those kinds of things that if you saw that in a person, you'd think clearly something is wrong. What in those particular cases, how do you make the decision? Do you wait and kind of see what happens, or you do what you can to make the animal comfortable, or you say, okay, we're going to go down to the emergency room?
And they're always welcome to call. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we have somebody answering the phone. In the daytime, we have doctors. At night, we have students. We have doctors in the hospital 24/7, but the students answer the phone at night, and the doctor is available. So they can always call and ask if they're not sure, if they're not quite sure if they should just wait till morning or come in. But again, they're always welcome to just walk in too.
Yeah, okay. So they can certainly call and give the best description they can of symptoms. Talk about, okay, here's what's going on. What do you think? And then the doctor on the other end maybe will say, well, I can tell you what to do. You can wait a little bit. Or maybe in some cases they'll say, well, my recommendation would be for you to bring this animal. Come on down. We're here.
That's right. And sometimes we tell them advice over the phone, like if they think it's gotten into rat poison, we'll have them make the dog vomit at home so we can get it up as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. I know that that was something for a long time here at the U of I, that they had a poison control center. Is that still in operation?
Absolutely. The ASPCA, Poison Control Center, is here in Champaign, and we are so lucky to have it. Honestly, it's world-renowned poison control center. They get all the calls from around the country and in some cases around the world. And they have a huge board of toxicologists available, veterinary toxicologists who specialize in this. And they are available, and we're fortunate at U of I that we get to use them free.
So it's actually not part of the university? It's not under the heading of the vet school?
That's correct. It's not under the heading, but we have a very great relationship with them, so we collaborate with them. We can sometimes use their database to find information out about poisons that are new and emergent toxins or something like that.
Yeah, okay. So again, if somebody had that kind of emergency, would the best thing to do, would you suggest they should probably call? Don't try to find that number. Call you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because sometimes we can discern other information that they need to know before they even call.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a caller here, and we'd welcome others if you have questions about companion animals. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Paris. The caller's in Paris here. Line number one. Hello.
Yes. I have a cat. It's about a year and a half old. Seems very healthy, except for it has very bad breath. And I've brushed its teeth, and I just wondered if there's something that I should be looking for. Or, like I said, it seems healthy other than that.
Oh, you've called on the right day. We've got a specialist here.
So that's excellent that you brush your cat's teeth. And when you brush them, do the gums bleed at all?
No, they don't.
Oh, and is the bad breath all the time or just some of the time?
It seems like it's all the time.
So sometimes, and what kind of food do you give your cat?
Dry cat food and one wet can a day.
Right. So do you see any tartar or calculus, thick, tan, white debris on the outer crowns of the teeth, on the outer surface of the teeth? Not at all.
No.
So the best way to tell is probably to have your veterinarian look at the cat's mouth and see if there is some underlying periodontal disease, which would be disease around up underneath the gums where you might not be able to see it as well, and that might be the source of the bad breath. Sometimes in some cats, you actually are smelling stomach contents when they, depending on what they eat for their diet. But the fact that you brush your cat's teeth, do you do it every day, did you say?
No, about every other day.
That's excellent, because by doing that, that is the very best thing you can do for your pet, is to brush your dog or your cat's teeth daily if you can, or at least every other day. And by doing that, you can, if you keep plaque off of their teeth, they will not then develop periodontal disease. But when you do have an animal with bad breath, it's always a good idea to get it checked out by your veterinarian to make sure there's not some underlying disease that you cannot see.
Okay, because my other cats eat the same diet and they do not have this. So.
Yes, and sometimes it's more related to that cat's particular body makeup. Just like some people have more trouble with their teeth, some cats and dogs have more trouble than others. Some are just born with better teeth than others. So I think the best thing is just to have it looked at to make sure that there's nothing, no underlying disease causing that problem.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right, thanks. We have some other callers here, and at some point I want to get back to this toothbrushing for dogs and cats. But just as a basic point, I think that you would say, and I know I read something on this that came out of the vet school, that bad breath in a dog or a cat it's not normal, and it is an indication that something's going on that needs to be addressed.
Correct. Your dog's breath, you should be able to have your dog kiss you and not recoil in disgust.
Okay. Other questions here. Next is someone in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My question is about the emergency services. Are there any plans, or are there any emergency services for large animals?
Actually, we do have large animal emergency open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just as we do small. And we are in the process of building up the large animal, particularly the equine section. And I really can't go into any more details because nothing's been confirmed completely, but we are making some incredible progress. And I think in about the next 6 months, we're going to have some incredible announcements.
Does that get at your question? Okay. So you're talking about horses, cattle, swine, sheep, all of these kind of animals?
Actually, not only large, but I have to tell you, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we had a wallaby on in
no
small
kidding.
Animal.
Wallaby, really?
We had a wallaby, we had a turtle, we see pretty much anything. I don't know, I think the only species we don't see are primates, and that's just for human safety.
Okay, so here again, exotic animals, it's possible, we're not, most people, I'm sure, their companion animals are going to be dogs or cats, but that you are geared up so that you can take unusual animals as well.
Absolutely. We have a phenomenal exotic section. We have two exotic veterinarians that are absolutely awesome. They have an exotic technician who is incredible with exotic animals. And we will take those animals in 24/7 through the emergency service, and they are available to us 24/7. So we will call them. They'll come in. They'll help with the wallaby. They'll help with whatever animal it is. Absolutely.
Another call here. This is also Urbana, and it's line number three. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
Yes, I had three basically pretty pedestrian, mundane questions, but what location do you take an animal to, like a dog, for instance, if you were to come out for emergency care?
Okay, we are right located. If you go up Lincoln Avenue, and if you're coming from Windsor and you go up Lincoln, you would make a left at Hazelwood. And
yes.
Right now, you'll see that at the bottom of the U of I sign, where it says College of Veterinary Medicine, there's a big red emergency sign that's lit up at night, and it says 24-hour emergency care. If you follow that arrow and you go in, the next big emergency sign will show you to make a right into the small animal clinic.
Okay, and that's a circular drive there off of, it's kind of a, you make a circle and you can come out parking lot there and faces south, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And the other thing was, what is the emergency number that you call?
I believe it's 333-5300, and then that'll get you through to the emergency room.
Okay, 333-5300.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's basically the small animal emergency number, and then that it'll give you an option to press a certain number for emergencies.
Okay. And then the final question was, as a veterinarian as well as a professor of veterinary medicine, do you think that, like, major medical plans for animals, dogs or cats, is a good idea, or are they prevalent now? And I guess you would contact your own vet private vet to find out about the details. But I just wonder what you thought of that.
I think that they are becoming more popular slowly. I don't think they've caught on quite as fast as certainly human HMOs, but they are starting to pick up. Part of it may be because our job doesn't cover the animal insurance, and we have to pay for it ourselves. And it's a little hard for some people to pay out of pocket early before anything happens. But it can be life-saving when it's a devastating injury or, you know, something like a tick paralysis in a dog where they're paralyzed, they have to be put on a ventilator, and they have a very good prognosis. That's something that could really help.
Exactly. Usually the mundane, everyday things you can afford to do, but when you're faced with a life-or-death decision about your pet, you hate to have money be the standard that makes your decision, your criteria, I guess.
That's correct. Yeah. And we do have something called Care Credit available at the vet school. Care Credit will allow people to get credit instantly, basically, and that will help them also.
I thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And the number is indeed 217-333-5300.
Thank you.
The number to call. And apparently you have another number for veterinarians to use. If they have an animal and it's on its way to you, the vets have a special number. It's just for them to call and say, hi, this is Dr. Dave. I'm sending an animal. Here's the deal. And so you will get a head up that way. But as far as people, just everyday folks are concerned, 333-5300 is the number.
Thank you.
All right. And we go on again. And our next caller is in Danville. This is line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. How are you?
Good.
I have a question. I cleaned my carpets over the weekend, or scrubbed them, carpet cleaner and everything. And now my cat and my dog are urinating all over the carpet since I cleaned them. And I cannot figure out why.
Sometimes that can happen when they have an odd smell or something that sort of irritates them. And probably what the best thing to do would be, if it's possible, to keep them away from that carpet for about a week. Is that something where you can sort of fence off that area?
Probably, yes.
That might be a good idea, just for about a week. It's probably a very unusual smell. It's almost as if another animal comes into the house and marks. They don't understand what's going on, why it doesn't smell the way it's always smelled.
Okay.
And they're trying to establish their territory there. And if you just don't give them that opportunity, it'd probably be a good idea.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guests in this part of Focus 580, Carol Akers and Maureen McMichael. They're both doctors of veterinary medicine here at the U of I in the College of Vet Medicine. And we are giving you the chance to call in here, ask general questions about pets, about pet care, or can be also emergency kind of things. That is, in this event, what would I do? We can do that, because that's pretty much Maureen McMichael's special area of interest. And then also, certainly, if you have dental questions, that's Carol Akers' thing. And so you can give us a call, and we'd be very happy to take the question. I want to come back here to routine brushing of
yes.
teeth, because this is something that is recommended.
Yes,
and some people might say, how in the world, they might say, I'm sorry, I know this is a fine thing, but my cat, my dog, they're good animals and they're well behaved, but they're not going to let me do this, or it's going to be really difficult. How do you approach that, particularly if you have an adult animal and you've never done this before?
Right, and that's a really good point, because you don't want to get bit. And you want your pet to associate the toothbrushing with something they enjoy. You do not want to use human toothpaste because it has a lot of fluoride in it, and that could be poisonous to your pet because they don't spit it out like you do. But there are many pet toothpastes you can buy at the pet store that are flavored, like liver flavor, chicken
Yum,
flavor.
Liver toothpaste.
Peanut butter flavor. But the key is to start out slowly. Certainly if you have a puppy or a kitten, it's a good idea just in the general getting to know your puppy or kitten to handle their mouth, just pick up their lip, touch their teeth in a non-threatening way, get them used to it. And then for an older dog, you know your own dog's temperament. Some dogs are not going to let you do it, and in that case, you would go to the second best option, which would be to find some kind of safe chew toy, or nothing too hard. If it's too hard, it'll break their teeth. So something like some dogs do fine with the flat rawhide strips, or there's some toys called Kong toys that are rubber toys that are safe for them to chew on. For cats, they make some little treats for them to chew on. Brushing is always the best. So if you have a dog that you think will let you do it, Just start out slowly. Maybe just brush the outside of the big fang teeth in the front first and see how they accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Just start out slowly and make it like you're really happy to be doing it and that you're happy to do it and pet them and praise them. But if they do seem like they're aggressive, the other thing is if they're really resisting you, they might be painful because their mouth might hurt. So if you have a dog that has periodontal disease, their gums are really sore, and they'll bleed if you brush them. And, of course, the dog's not going to like that. So then the best plan is to have your veterinarian clean the teeth really well and then start a brushing program.
And you do – what's the recommendation for having a professional cleaning for a dog or a cat?
Well, it depends. Probably the best is every time you're in, have your animal checked for its regular visit, the veterinarian will look at the teeth. Some animals need it – every year, some small breeds of dogs are more prone to periodontal disease, might need a professional cleaning as much as twice a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it is the kind of, I'm sure that there are some people might say they can't quite imagine doing this, but not only is it possible, but particularly I think if you have the chance to work with the animals when they're young, that actually,
yes.
Cats, even I know that I have read of people saying that they started with their cats when they were kittens. And in doing this, and you got to, you know, get some of that yummy liver flavored toothpaste and particular things to do it with. You can't obviously use you're not going to go out and get a toothbrush and do that, at least not with a cat. I don't know.
Well, you could use a small toothbrush, a children's toothbrush. You want it to be soft. If you go to the pet store, they make all different kinds of things, little things that fit on your finger that you can reach back there with. You can even use a Q-tip on a cat. You just have to rub the outside surface of the teeth and get that plaque off. So just a Q-tip, a small brush. Some people use a washcloth. Anything you can find that will just rub that plaque right off of the teeth that the pet will tolerate will work fine.
Yeah, okay. We have another caller here to talk with someone in Crete. This is on our line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, I have a two-parter. My wife believes that the process of giving revolution should begin sometime in February or March. I maintain that that's a little early. We should perhaps begin it in April, May. I wondered what your opinion was on that for cats.
Well, I can tell you, I just got here from Texas, so I've been in Texas for the last 6 years, and we don't have a winter. So we have fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes 24/7, 365 days a year. And so we where I just came from, we use those products year-round. Now, here, it's really not necessary. And I think probably your local veterinarian would be the best resource for you of when to start those products. Most likely it would be after the last frost is predicted.
I just wondered again regarding the dry versus wet scenario. Do you favor 50-50 for cats, or do you favor more dry or more wet? How does you come down on that?
I think it's good to give them both dry and wet food. There are some people who believe that straight dry food for cats, the cats then do not get enough moisture in their diet. And so probably the best recommendation is to give 50-50, sounds good. It's not really the diet that keeps their teeth clean. You have to do something else yourself, either some kind of chew thing that will clean their teeth, or brushing is always the best.
And a child's brush, you say, is as good as anything for that?
Well, if you're talking about cats, you need something small that will fit between their lip and their teeth. So you could just look and see what kind of brushes there are. There's some small human brushes that they make for people that like to fit down in between the teeth, little interdental brushes, and you could look at some of those and see if they would fit your cat's mouth.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And again, other questions are certainly welcome. We're at our midpoint and have time for other calls. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our guests on the program today, Drs. Carol Akers and Maureen McMichael from the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. If you have questions about your companion animals, you give us a call. What do you do about broken teeth? And is that a problem, and is that something that you should not let go?
Yeah,
untreated?
That's a really good question, and it's a very common problem in both dogs and cats, whether from trauma or from chewing on something too hard. Sometimes we see it when a big dog bites a little dog. But it is always important because What you need to determine is if the pulp in the center of the tooth has been exposed by the fracture. And if that's the case, then the tooth needs immediate attention. This is very painful for them, just as it would be for you if you broke a tooth and had the nerve in the center of your tooth exposed. These teeth either need to be extracted or have a root canal done. And we do a lot of root canals at the University of Illinois, especially police dogs in particular, really need to have their big canine teeth for their work. It's very important, and they often come to the University of Illinois Dental Service and have root canals done, and then they get these really cool-looking titanium crowns put on the teeth, so they have these big silver teeth. The policemen are always very happy with this. But a broken tooth needs to be attended to as soon as you notice it, if possible.
So you actually do all of the kind of things that you would do in human dentistry, at least extractions and root canals you can do with an animal's teeth. Do you actually do fillings, or is that something you would just say either you'd pull the teeth out or
Well, fillings like would have to do with cavities, and dogs and cats very rarely get cavities because the shape of their teeth are designed more for tearing rather than for grinding, more like ours are. So they are a couple teeth molars way in the back that will occasionally get cavities, but we rarely see it. But almost anything that you can do in human dentistry, you can now do in dogs or cats, including implants. Some people have even had implants done for their dogs. So root canals are quite commonly done to save a tooth. Extractions are done for a tooth that either can't be saved because the periodontal disease is so severe, or that the owner prefers to have the extraction done as opposed to a root canal.
Yeah. Is it how serious an issue is it for an animal to have a missing tooth? Say you've got a tooth that's got some kind of a problem, and the owner decides for whatever reason, or maybe the doctor decides the thing is to take the tooth out. Is that going to be a big problem for an animal to have a missing tooth?
Well, part of it depends on which tooth it is. There are certain teeth in the mouth that are what we call strategic teeth that are very important. But even without those, dogs and cats who live with an owner will do fine because they don't have to go out and hunt their own food. And we even have some cats get a terrible disease, which is not well understood, but we end up having to take out all their teeth, and these cats do very well. And some little dogs with extremely advanced periodontal disease end up losing all their teeth, and some of them will even eat hard food still. So the question, you can take out their teeth. You try to save them if possible, and many people elect to do things like root canals instead of extractions. But if your dog needs to have a tooth removed, he will most likely do fine.
All right. Well, let's take another call here. We have someone on a cell phone. We'll get right to them on our line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
My question is on a purebred Nubian goat that's kitted once and is gestating now. What about trimming the hoofs, and where would I find information on this? And would that be considered a large animal or a small animal? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thank you.
What do you know about Nubian goats?
That would be considered a large animal, and it would be farm animal. And the University of Illinois has a fantastic farm service, and they would be the best people to call to ask those details.
Okay. And what number do you know?
If you call 333-5300, you can ask for the farm section, and they'll be able to find it for you.
Okay. Well, again, hope that helps. Other questions, welcome to 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. I wanted to get that call, but not make that person wait. But coming back to a dental question, as you pointed out, I think that we know as far as human dentistry is concerned is that some people are more prone to periodontal problems than others. There are some people who are more prone to cavities. You know, there are some people who go through their entire lives and say, I never had one. And other people who have a lot of problems. And apparently it has something to do with the individual chemistry of the mouth, why some people have problems and some people don't. Are there particular breeds of dogs, I guess here I'm thinking mostly about dogs, that tend to have more dental problems than others?
Yes, there are, and it's primarily the small dogs. Dogs, say, less than 20 pounds, for example, are most likely. Part of it is because their teeth are more crowded, And so the normal cleaning, normal dog, if you think of a German Shepherd, has a long nose and their teeth are lined up so that when they close their mouth, they have what's called a scissors bite. And that helps clean debris off the teeth when they open, when they close their mouth. But then if you look, for example, at a Shih Tzu, its nose is very short, or a pug. Pugs are very popular. Their teeth, to fit a dog has 42 teeth normally. So to fit 42 teeth in a German Shepherd's mouth is not as difficult as it is to cram 42 teeth into a pug's mouth. And so the teeth tend to get rotated and jammed together, and this makes them much more likely to get food particles trapped between the teeth, and then they develop periodontal disease much more rapidly. So if you have a small breed dog, it's especially important to try to do some kind of home care, brushing. There are some rinses. So if your dog, I forgot to mention that earlier, that there are some rinses that have chlorhexidine or some other disinfectant in them. That, and some animals will tolerate that. If you could rinse their mouth once or twice a day, especially after eating, then that can help prevent a lot of dental disease.
Mm. Nobody does orthodontia on dogs, do they?
They do a lot of orthodontia on dogs, and sometimes not so much for cosmetic reasons, but to relieve a painful bite. So some dogs are perhaps born with either their jaw, either they have a malformed jaw from a previous trauma, or they're just the way they are shaped. And when they close their mouth, the lower teeth may, for example, hit against the roof of the mouth. And that's extremely painful for them. And so if you can, with orthodontia, move those teeth back to a more normal position, then the dog can have a pain-free bite for the rest of his life. And that's usually the most common reason for using orthodontia.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I want to tell people who are listening that we are open here to your questions about companion animals. Our guests are Drs. Carol Akers and Maureen McMichael. They're both veterinarian, doctors of veterinary medicine at the U of I College of Vet Medicine here. And if you have questions, again, give us a call. Take advantage of their being here. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. In the kinds of things that you see on an emergency basis, what are the most common causes of injury for dogs and cats?
The most common are toxicities. So rat poison. A lot of people don't realize rat poison tastes like peanut butter, so it's actually quite tasty for animals. Other toxins like ethylene glycol, which is antifreeze. Antifreeze tastes like sugar, so it's tasty. And then trauma. Hit by car. We had a cat with an arrow injury. So any kind of trauma we can see, and the nice thing for me, the nice thing about emergency medicine is we don't know what's coming in the door.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea, and we are ready 24/7 for whatever it is that comes in.
Yeah. So people really need to make sure that any potentially toxic stuff that they have around the house, in the basement, in the kitchen, in the garage, any place where the animals have access to, that's in a place where, well, they can't get access to it. You don't want them to get at it. And in particular, I think it's good to remind people about the antifreeze thing. I don't know how many people do that for themselves anymore, but that it tastes sweet and it's very toxic. And if it's around, dogs will just, they'll just lap it up.
That's right. And one teaspoon can kill a cat, and just a tablespoon or so can kill a dog. It's amazing how toxic some of these substances are. And the same thing with rat poison. Rat poison is very subtle because they'll eat it and they'll seem like they're fine for 2 days or so, and then they'll start getting a little lethargic, which doesn't usually concern people. Then they bleed everywhere. They bleed into their lungs. They bleed everywhere. And at that point, it's hard to save them. Mm-hmm. When we do everything we can, we have blood transfusions. We have our own blood bank. So we can do everything we can, but if people could just avoid those toxins in any way and avoid exposure, as you said, that would really help.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk with another caller. This is someone in Champaign, I believe on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a male cat that I rescue. He's 3 years old, and he is one of six of cats, and he will not stop urinating on soft surfaces, like the couch or a pillow. I can't have rugs in the floor or a tablecloth. I was wondering if there's anything I can do, because I'm at my rope's end with him.
People have probably one of the best things to do is consult a behaviorist, and they can actually analyze the entire situation. People have done everything from spraying the area. Sometimes one of the problems is once they urinate, then they've marked that area and they want to urinate on that area over and over and over. And so doing a complete cleansing, so getting rid of as much of it as possible, and then maybe even using something on top of it so that he can't smell it, can really help a lot. That can go a long way.
What kind of things on top of it?
Well, a lot of people recommend Febreze.
Okay.
And I'm not sure of what other substances, but whatever it is, make sure that it's safe for animals.
Okay.
So just make sure that it's safe for them.
And where can I contact a behaviorist?
Dr. Ridgway is a behaviorist at the University of Illinois. So University of Illinois, Dr. Ridgway, she's an internist, and
okay.
she does some behavior, and she'll be able to help you out with that.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think that it is true that there are some variety of products that are made specifically to dealing with pet stains and that odor that they claim, at least, they take the odor out. I guess the problem is that with cats and dogs, their sense of smell is much more acute than ours. And we could get it to the point where we wouldn't smell it anymore, but they could still smell it.
Absolutely. And that's actually an incredibly valuable thing with them. They now have dogs that will smell mold. So they have mold-sniffing dogs that can go into a house and tell you if there's mold in there because their sense of smell is so amazing.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing that you also want to make sure that there aren't any other health problems going on with the animal. So if you do have an animal, I think people think about this with cats, but I suppose, you know, uncontrolled urination, the first thing that you want to do is to make an appointment with your vet and get the animal checked out just to make sure that there's no health problem that could be causing that and then that could be addressed.
That's correct, because inappropriate urination is different from urination from causes like we call it polyuria, polydipsia. Diabetes can cause them to urinate excessively. And so there could be excessive urination or it could be inappropriate urination. And either an internist or behaviorist or a local veterinarian can certainly differentiate those and help people to understand if it's a medical cause like a urinary tract infection or diabetes, or if it's just a local issue, a behavioral issue. Absolutely.
Okay. It strikes me that, and I don't know if this is the case or not, it strikes me that I'm hearing more and more about people who have older cats who have diabetes. And I don't know if that somehow it's more common, if it may have something to do with the fact that the animals are living longer, and that might be an issue. Do you see diabetes in cats more now than you did 5-10 years ago?
Well, one of the problems being at a referral center is that we only see sick animals. So So we see lots of diabetes in cats, but it's hard to tell. We don't have a huge normal cat population to compare it to. We do certainly see a lot of diabetes in cats, though. Absolutely. And we have some of the best diabetes researchers here at the U of I for cats. And Tom Graves is an internist, and he is a diabetes researcher who is working on some new novel insulins and has done some incredible work on diabetes in cats. So this is the place to be if you have diabetes in your cat.
Mm-hmm. I guess we have some notion of things that might predispose a human to diabetes. Weight is an issue. Family history is an issue. You know, there may be other things. And there with humans, at least, if people are getting periodic checkups, you can check their blood sugar and you can see what's going on. I mean, that's an easy routine screening that you can do on people. And probably we're identifying more and more people that are considered to be pre-diabetic, where you can do some intervention with that person in terms of their lifestyle and try to reduce the chances or at least hold it off so that if you're going to have a problem, you know, keep it from happening as much as possible. Is there anything in a cat, I guess I'm thinking particularly about cat, that would give you the tip off that they might be predisposed to diabetes? And then, you know, if you can diagnose a cat as being pre-diabetic, well, what do you do?
Well, one of the problems with cats is that they stress very, very easily, and they really stress when they come to the hospital. And that's whether it's our hospital or local veterinarian, and their blood sugar goes up when they stress. So we have some other tests that will show you how long their blood sugar, or it'll show you that their blood sugar has been elevated for a significant amount of time. It's called fructosamine. And that really helps a lot because we can have a cat in there who's stressed, do this test, and find out that his blood sugar has been elevated for over the last several weeks or so. And that's one of the ways that we can diagnose either prediabetes or diabetes. And then there is an association with obesity in cats and diabetes, and people are trying to look at obesity and try to work on that. Mm-hmm. And then there's another, a dietary factor, which is there's some evidence now that high protein or actually low fiber diets are good for cats. Cats evolved in the wild to eat mice. They didn't have a lot of vegetables in the wild or a lot of wheat or even soy. And that's a big component of a lot of the foods. And so some of the newer foods that are low fiber are showing some benefit with diabetes in cats.
Yeah. So anything in a cat that you would see other than they're drinking a lot and their urine output is a lot, if there's a big change or, you know, maybe even over time that you would notice a change that they seem to be drinking a lot, that's got to be a sign. Is there anything else that you would say that people would want to be looking for?
That's probably the earliest and the most important sign, because if you get it early, you have a good chance. Sometimes they become what we call polyphagic, where they'll eat a lot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll have a significant weight loss. Over a short period of time, they'll have a big weight loss. And that's another big clue.
Mm-hmm. And then when you get to that point, are there things that you do before you get to the point where you actually have to start giving insulin to the cat?
They have oral glucose-lowering agents, and some cats can be tried on those, and some cats do great on those. They don't really need anything else. Mm-hmm. And then other cats do need insulin. And there is a form of transient diabetes in cats where some cats will have the diet change, go on insulin for a little while, and eventually get weaned off of it.
Okay. Again, I just want to tell people we got about maybe 6, 7, 8 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. And our guests are Carol Akers and Maureen McMichael. They're veterinarians here with the U of I College of Vet Medicine. And if you have questions about routine care for your animals, here we talked fairly specifically about dentistry and about trauma. And those are the kinds of things that they're really, both of them are very interested in. But we can take more general questions, too. It doesn't have to be on either of those subjects. If you have a dog or a cat and you have some questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. On the diet issue, I'm sure that that's a question that people have all the time. What is best to feed my animal, my dog or my cat? And I'm sure that you go down there to wherever you buy your pet food, you go to the grocery store, you go to a place where they sell pet stuff. They got a whole aisle full of it. And the manufacturers are trying, you know, you can't take the dog or the cat to there and say, well, I want this one. You're gonna pick it out. So obviously they're selling to the owners. Everything that they're doing, the pictures they put on there, what they call it, the language, how they describe the stuff, they're selling it. They're selling it to you. So obviously they're trying to get your attention that this is good for your animal. How do you sort among all those choices and decide what's really good?
Well, there are certain foods that are designed for specific purposes. So if you have an animal that's overweight, there are many foods that are designed to be lower calorie, lower fat. So if that's the case with your pet, you would look at those. I think any of the name brand, their pet foods are really good these days. They really are. Great products are out there. And there are other ones that are prescription diets for very specific illnesses, such as if you have an animal that has kidney disease. They've developed diets that help pets that have kidney disease have a better quality of life while they're living with the disease. That's one example. And then speaking of dentistry, there are some diets that have either an enzyme added to the food to help remove plaque or to help try to prevent plaque from building up so rapidly on the teeth. And then there are some diets that are designed that when the pet bites into the kibble, this is a dry food I'm speaking of, it helps clean the teeth off. So if your pet has a specific condition, then there is probably a diet specifically for that condition.
So probably that's the kind of thing that it's best to talk with your vet and maybe
right.
get a particular recommendation.
Right.
Otherwise, anything that was a good nationally recognized brand name, and you might also want to think about, well, my animal, what stage of life are they? Are they adolescent, child, middle-aged,
right.
mature? Are they a senior? Do they have weight issues? Are there particular things? Because the specific, as you say, specific diets will be formulated for, generally speaking, for particular kinds of animals, and probably you can say, well, okay, this is my animal, this is what they're like, this is where they are in their life, and I can kind of tell which one of these things I really wanted to get.
Yes, yeah. That sounds good.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's talk with somebody else. Line one in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yes, hi.
This may be a really dumb question, but I have an Australian Shepherd who's 5 years old, and he just sometimes seems to have spells of sadness, is the way I describe it. My husband just keeps insisting that the dog is just getting old and it's not going to be around long, which I can't face. But I'm just wondering, is 5 really considered old for an Aussie?
No, absolutely not. No, 5 is not. I mean, the larger the breed, the lower the lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So Great Danes, very short lifespan.
Right.
And Aussies do not have a short lifespan. 5 is young, middle age. I mean, he should be excited and running around. And so it probably would be a good idea to just have a regular checkup at your veterinarian, have him looked at, make sure everything looks okay,
mm-hmm.
because he really shouldn't be having this at this age.
Yeah, okay. Well, he seems to be in pretty good health. We were at the vets only about a month ago, and he was fine, but every once in a while, it's not a constant thing, and it doesn't last that long. But I think he's just bored and maybe needs more exercise. Is that because he is a shepherd? Does he really need to get out and run a lot?
That's true, and absolutely. That is essential for all dogs, and especially breeds that are used to having a lot of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
That could be really helpful. And you should try to keep a log of when it happens, because it may be after certain foods, it may be after certain exercise, and that might help pinpoint it. Because if it happens after exercise, it could be an arthritis, an early arthritis condition. And there's some very, very safe nutraceuticals like chondroitin sulfate, glucosamine, SAMe, that can be really helpful for
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And your veterinarian can talk to you about all the options if that's what it ends up being.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And to another caller, and this is someone in Urbana on our line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, we have two cats. They're both going to be getting close to 4 years old, but one's a female. She's been spayed, and she's quite a few pounds overweight. I think she's probably about 14 pounds, not a weight closer to 8. And then the male's nice and trim and lean and active. The overweight female is not active and doesn't seem to want to be. Question is, what can we do to reduce the weight on the overweight cat?
Well, one thing that people really talk about now is improving the environment of your cat. Are your cats indoors only?
Yes.
So they're probably not getting that much exercise. So there's all different kinds of, there's a new sort of field, if you would call it that, of environmental stimulation for cats that live indoors. So you can do things like buy or build those little cat condos or furniture for them to climb on. You can get toys for them, pull them around, get them to chase them, just to try to get them to exercise a little bit more. And then probably it's not a good idea to leave food out free choice, since you have one cat that can eat as much as it wants and one who can't.
Mm-hmm.
So feeding them separately and keeping track of how much you feed the female will help you with that. But if you can stimulate their environment where they get a little more exercise, that might help her also.
Yeah, the male, he's active as all get out. We got the climbing things, the condos, and he works them over like crazy, and he's a real hoot to watch. The female, well, he takes over. He pushes her out of it.
And that might be part of it. Maybe she needs her own time
mm-hmm.
without him around.
Yeah, she will chase the laser pointer by herself.
Yes, and well, it sounds like you've started doing some things, so that's good.
Yeah, well, we wanted to keep him entertained. And the female does eat a different food, too, but it's difficult for my wife to hear her cry when she wants more food.
Yes.
So I right. have to work on my wife, I guess.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
thanks
for the call.
Thank you.
Guess we're almost to the point we have to finish up, but I think that this and the last question just point to something that people really need to keep in mind about their animals, and that is they do need physical exercise, and that it's the kind of thing that you, particularly with a dog, you do need to think about that breed and what they were created to do, what their natural inclination is, and that you know, people make their choices emotionally. They choose a dog because they like the way that it looks. But if you get yourself a working breed, you've got a dog that's going to want to be active and run around, and you really need to try to find a way for them to do it, because if you don't, they're going to find all kinds of ways to amuse themselves, which may be problematic, and then you might have health problems that come with the fact that they're just not getting enough exercise. But again, that can be sort of tough depending on where you live and how you live and what your life is like.
Well, and Champaign has that new dog park, which is great. So people can all go there and bring their dogs and let them run. And the dogs are much more likely to run when there are other dogs around than if you take them to the park by yourself.
Yeah. But the same thing also goes for cats, and it's, I think it's perfectly fine. I mean, I guess I'm among that tribe that thinks it's fine for the cats to live indoors, and they're going to get in more trouble if you let them out. But that you may have to really make an effort to make opportunities to engage them, to play with them, to give them things to encourage them to be active, or else they're just going to turn into couch potatoes and you're going to have weight problems and then diabetes maybe, and you know, who knows what other kinds of problems you have.
That's great. That's right.
Well, there we'll leave it again with the reminder to people that now at the U of I Vet School, 24 hours a day, emergency service is available. So if you got a problem at night, on the weekend, whenever, and you can't reach your own vet, you can call ahead or you can just show up. You can take your animal. You can just go down there if you have a problem. You can call and say, I've got this problem. What should I do? Or you can just stop by. Tell us now where it is.
Again, it's off of Lincoln. If you come up from Windsor, come up Lincoln, and you'd make a left on Hazelwood, and you'll see the sign. The sign is right there. It's a big red emergency sign that's lit up at night, and it'll bring you in, and then there's another emergency sign that'll have you make a right into the small animal clinic. And again, 24/7, 365 days a year. We're open Christmas, Thanksgiving, any day.
Oh, that's great. And also people can look at the website of the College of Vet Medicine, and there is a lot of information there, companion animal information, maybe frequently asked questions or information about diet and wellness and behavior, all that kind of stuff is there. So people can take a look at it and take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate
you
being here. Our guests, Drs. Carol Akers and Maureen McMichael, they're both doctors of veterinary medicine at the U of I College of Vet Medicine.